This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, September 17th, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, across the world, protests against U.S. policies and anger over an anti-Islam film spread. Teachers in Chicago enter the second week of a strike as negotiations with the city continue. And today marks the one-year anniversary of the Occupy movement. We'll go to New York, where protesters march through streets and hold meetings amid a large police presence. Those stories and more coming up after this news.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. The United States and China traded economic fire today as each lodged complaints against the other at the World Trade Organization. China says a U.S. tariff on imported goods like wind towers, paper, and steel is unfair. The U.S. says the tax is levied because the products are being sold at less than fair market value. This, the White House claims, undercuts U.S. markets. The complaint from China came as the U.S. was also filing a WTO charge over auto and auto parts prices, saying that the artificially low prices China is charging in that market are partially responsible for the loss of jobs in the U.S. auto industry. Turkey's prime minister today claimed that 500 Kurdish rebels have been, quote, rendered ineffective, a euphemism for killed or captured, in the past month. His comments come as the 28-year-old conflict between Kurdish militants and the Turkish military continues to escalate, with heavy casualties on both sides. Jacob Resnick has more from Istanbul.
It was a bloody weekend with 8 police officers killed in a Sunday roadside bomb attack blamed on the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as the PKK. It was just another in a string of clashes that the military says has claimed 463 lives from February to the end of August. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called on the judiciary to ban the largest Kurdish political party, claiming it is the political wing of the banned PKK. That would be a mistake, warns analyst Hugh Pope of the International Crisis Group.
Our recommendation to the government is not to fall into the trap. It must concentrate on finishing off the democratic opening that it started with so much hope. That's the way forward. Solve the Kurdish problem, then deal with the PKK.
The US, EU, and Turkey list the PKK as a terrorist organization. The conflict, chiefly over Kurdish language rights and political autonomy in Turkey's southeast, has killed around 40,000 people since 1984. Jacob Resnick, FSRN, Istanbul.
German sportswear giant Adidas and its subsidiary, Reebok, came under attack in India today over new business practices. Hundreds of franchise owners and workers demonstrated in New Delhi. Bismila Gilani reports.
The protesters set fire to a pile of Reebok products and shouted slogans against Reebok and its Germany-based parent company, Adidas. Reebok stores across North India closed in solidarity. They say the company's new business model is not viable and poses a serious threat to their livelihood. Under the new plan, franchise holders would no longer be guaranteed a minimum income, but would instead be offered stock at what Adidas calls a reasonable discount. Rakesh Tyagi works at a Reebok store in New Delhi.
This simply means that the franchise partners close down their stores and people like us who earn a living from these stores starve. This is just plain fraud.
Nearly 900 Reebok stores in India could face closure if the company's new business policy comes into effect as scheduled in December. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
A Gaza court convicted and sentenced 4 men for last year's murder of an Italian peace activist. Rami Almagari has more.
The Gaza City court convicted 4 men for the murder of International Solidarity Movement activist Vittorio Arrigoni, Mahmoud Salfiti and Tamir Hassasna were sentenced to life imprisonment plus 10 years for kidnap and murder. The other 2 were sentenced for lesser charges. All are believed to be Salafi Islamists. Arrigoni was kidnapped in April 2011. His captors demanded Hamas release a group of jihadist prisoners in exchange for his freedom, but he was killed before the deadline. His body was transferred to Italy, where he was laid to rest. Rami Almighari, FSRN, Gaza.
NATO has admitted killing 8 women and girls who were collecting firewood before sunrise in Afghanistan yesterday. Relatives delivered their bodies to the governor's office. Seven other females injured in the airstrike, one as young as 10, were admitted to the hospital. Brigadier General Gunter Katz.
The International Security Assistance Force extends its deepest regrets and sympathies to the families and loved ones of civilians who died or were injured during a coalition airstrike on 16th of September in Lahman province.
Hours earlier, NATO had denied that any civilians were killed, saying 45 armed insurgents died in a precision attack. The LA Times reports that over two decades, the Boy Scouts of America did not report thousands of allegations of child sexual abuse to authorities. Further, their examination of 1,600 files revealed that in many cases, parents were not notified and Boy Scout officials helped the accused avoid charges. The documents, known as the perversion files, were collected by the Boy Scouts in a failed attempt to blackball alleged abusers from re-entering the group. But in many cases, the men named in the files found their way back into the youth development group to abuse again. For FSRN, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Protests over a U.S.-produced film mocking Islam and the Prophet Muhammad have spread to dozens of countries around the world, with clashes over the weekend at U.S. embassies and military bases in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sudan, Libya, Tunisia, Egypt, Lebanon, the Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, and other countries. The Obama administration has condemned the message of the film and defended religious freedom. But some critics say anti-Muslim statements by other U.S. politicians and an aggressive U.S. foreign policy are continuing to fan the flames. FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
Although many of the protests have been peaceful, violence continues in some cities. Hundreds of Afghans protested outside a U.S. military base near Kabul Monday, setting some cars on fire and throwing rocks, while protesters in Karachi, Pakistan, clashed with police for several hours Sunday outside the U.S. consulate, leaving one person killed and dozens injured. Attacks on embassies in Tunisia and Sudan also motivated the U.S. State Department to evacuate all non-essential diplomats and their families and issue a travel advisory for those countries. Those protests also resulted in several deaths. White House spokesperson Jay Carney told reporters that President Obama is closely monitoring developments in these countries, where the U.S. has long had a heavy military and economic presence.
But this is not a case of protests directed at the United States writ large or at U.S. policy. This is in response to a video that is offensive to Muslims.
The Obama administration asked YouTube last week to review whether or not the video violated its policies against hate speech. Google, which owns the video hosting site, decided not to remove the video, but blocked access to it in Libya, Egypt, India, and Indonesia. On Monday, the Prime Minister of Pakistan called for shutting down the country's access to all of YouTube until the film is removed. The Afghan government is exploring similar steps. Civil liberties groups, including the Electronic Frontier Foundation, criticized President Obama for pressuring YouTube to selectively censor content, which they say sets a dangerous precedent. Conservative politicians and commentators have criticized the move as well and are defending the video as protected speech. At the religious right's recent Values Voters Summit, Minnesota Republican Michelle Bachmann said the administration wants the U.S. to be, quote, brainwashed in political correctness towards Islam.
That, my friends, explains the story of this week. Islamic enforced speech codes. They intend to force us to kiss our freedom of speech and religion goodbye, and that's why we're being forewarned today.
The U.S. State Department and several of its embassies have repeatedly condemned the video. Officials have also emphasized that the U.S. government has no ties to its production. Ibrahim Hooper with the Council on American-Islamic Relations helped distribute similar messages in Arabic, but says the frequent anti-Islam speeches by Bachmann, Peter King, and other prominent politicians undermines this message.
It doesn't help the situation when there's a pretty long history of anti-Muslim statements coming out of political circles, particularly on the right wing of the political spectrum. That just adds to any potential fallout from these kinds of things because people see it as kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
responding to claims by Bachman and Republican candidate Mitt Romney that the embassy attacks are a result of the administration's weakness in the region. Hooper said the violence should be read in a context that goes back several decades.
This isn't just religion. It's politics. It's geopolitics. It's history. It's history of intervention, whether we're in Iraq or Afghanistan or supporting dictators for decades in that region. There's all kinds of things that go into any reaction of this sort.
Robert Neiman with Just Foreign Policy agrees, but says there are changes the Obama administration could make now to improve relations with the Muslim world.
Getting the troops out of Afghanistan, ending or dramatically curtailing the drone strikes would dramatically lower the temperature in the region. We are causing more harm to the United States with these drone strikes than any plausible benefit.
Both Neiman and Hooper added that the U.S. support for Israeli militarism in the Middle East is also a growing source of tension as the blockade of Gaza and the spread of illegal settlements in the West Bank continues. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
The Chicago teachers' strike has now entered its second week. Union delegates voted to delay a decision on a proposed contract until at least Tuesday. Meanwhile, Chicago's Mayor Rahm Emanuel is now seeking a court injunction that will force the striking teachers back to work. FSRN's Jessel Noor brings us more from Chicago.
Outside of Curry, one of Chicago's biggest high schools, more than 200 public school teachers continue to strike. Curry serves over 3,000 of Chicago's 350,000 public school students who have been out of classes since last Monday. Some of them, including 16-year-old high school junior Isamar Vasquez, joined their teachers on the picket lines Monday morning.
Last night I baked cakes for the teachers and I'm passing them out with coffee.
Why?
Because I support the teachers and I appreciate everything that they do to us. They're always supporting us, so it's time to support them back.
Although educators remain at odds with Chicago Public Schools regarding evaluations and job security, teacher Sophia Verta says the strike has made Curry's school community stronger.
So I've personally been here 9 years, and I haven't seen as much team building and community, and all of us unified for the same cause as I have in the past week. So we have all been in this common cause of fighting for better working conditions, fighting for better conditions for our students. And everyone here has been so enthusiastic about that mission. We haven't had anybody not be with us on this. So it's been very empowering to see what it's doing to our school community.
Sunday night, the majority of the 700-member Chicago Teachers Union House of Delegates voted to extend the strike to give the union's 25,000 members more time to review the city's contract proposal. The union will reconvene Tuesday to either approve or reject the city's current proposal. Mayor Rahm Emanuel also filed a court order to force teachers back to work, but the Sun-Times reports the judge hearing the case won't take up the issue until Wednesday. The union says they will fight any injunction. Jessel Noor, FSRN, Chicago.
Wisconsin state officials say they will appeal a judge's ruling that found a sweeping anti-union law to be unconstitutional and restored workers' right to collectively bargain. Governor Scott Walker's Act 10 spurred months of protests and occupation of the Capitol and a recall election. FSRN's Molly Stentz has the story from Madison.
In a 27-page ruling, Dane County Judge Juan Colas said Act 10 violated the state's and the U.S. constitutions. The judge said that Governor Walker violated union members' rights of free speech, association, and equal protection when he placed severe restrictions on how unions could operate. Tens of thousands had protested at the state capitol while the law was being considered, sparking one of the most heated labor battles in the state's history. Following the ruling on Friday, Governor Walker called the judge a, quote, liberal activist who wants to go backwards and take away the lawmaking responsibilities of the legislature and the governor. But attorney Lester Pines, who won the case, said that this was an example of the three branches of government working, that the courts had corrected an egregious move by the governor and state lawmakers.
The Constitution of this state is the basic law of the state, and it seems that a number of our legislators have failed to comprehend that when they do something that violates the basic law of this state, it is the duty of the courts to correct their behavior. That's what Judge Colas did yesterday, and he did the right thing.
The ruling means that local city governments and school boards will have to recognize unions again and bargain with them as equal partners, like they did before Act 10 was passed. The case was brought by the Madison Teachers Union and a union of Milwaukee City employees. Madison Teachers Incorporated board president Carrie Motovilov was headed to a rally at the Capitol when she got the news on Friday. The rally was held in support of the Chicago Teachers Union, who are still out on strike, but quickly also became a celebration of the successful lawsuit.
This is all one movement. We had a victory in the movement today. Tomorrow we go celebrate our victory with our brothers and sisters, and the movement goes on.
Not all unions will benefit from this court ruling immediately. Unions representing state workers were not part of this lawsuit. They filed a different suit and will not be affected by this case. There are also fewer unions in existence now, a year after the law took effect. The state attorney general has vowed to appeal the ruling and will ask the judge to stay the decision to prevent it from taking effect. Attorneys for both sides expect the case to reach the state's Supreme Court. Molly Stentz, FSRN, Madison.
Free Speech Radio News is a choice that matters. Respected worldwide for our coverage of social justice issues are investigations into how government and corporate policies affect people and our monitoring of environmental threats, struggles for equality, and much more. You choose to listen to FSRN to hear stories and voices ignored and unheard in the corporate and government press. Find out how you can help support us at our website, fsrn.org, where you can also download our newscasts, documentaries, and special reports. FSRN, a choice that matters. Today marks the one-year anniversary of the protests in New York City that launched the Occupy movement, with its highlight on the 99% and its focus on corporate greed and income inequality. The movement spread to hundreds of sites across the U.S. and the world. Today, people returned to Lower Manhattan amid a strong police presence. As of airtime, some 120 people had been arrested today, according to the National Lawyers Guild observers who are monitoring arrests in the area. From what we spoke earlier with FSRN's Melinda Tuhus in Lower Manhattan. Melinda, where are you now?
Right now I'm in Battery Park, which is at the lower end of Manhattan, right near the, you know, part of the financial district. There's a couple thousand people here who are expressing their views in various ways about economic inequality and what they'd like to see be different in America. And they just broke up into affinity groups to discuss actions for the rest of the day.
And what are people telling you about why they are there today?
For one thing, I talked to a lot of people who just wanted to show that the Occupy movement is not dead. I heard that from several people, and it definitely seems to be the case. I mean, it's a pretty lively group here. And, you know, they're here because they have student debt. They're here because either they or people they know had their homes foreclosed on. They feel like things have not improved in the last year. If anything, you know, maybe gotten worse in terms of the inequality that had sort of spurred the whole movement.
Now, fill in some of the details for us. What does the scene look like? Are there streets that are closed? What is the police presence like?
Okay, this morning there were a lot of police, some in riot gear and some not. And people were sort of moving. It was pretty chaotic, and I guess it was intentionally chaotic. They were moving in affinity groups and groups of affinity groups, blocking intersections. Some people went inside, you know, banks and were, you know, trying to disrupt businesses. But it was swirling, I guess, is what some groups called it. I talked to a labor group, and one guy was holding a sign that said "Labor Swirl," and so their intention was to go to a lot of places that represent, you know, oppression of labor. So they were going to Jackson Lewis, which they said is a big union-busting law firm. They were going by Chipotle because Chipotle has not agreed to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers' ask of, you know, a penny a pound more for tomatoes so that they could get a living wage. They were going to the post office so that they could highlight the number of, you know, postal workers who are going to be facing layoffs if they close all the post offices they're talking about. They were going to be going to Wells Fargo, and then they were going to be going by, which they said profits from immigration prisons, and then they were going to be stopping at the NLRB because they said we want free elections.
You mentioned several of the targets, the places that people were going to, restaurants or business centers. What about Wall Street? Were protesters able to access Wall Street in the main financial district there in Lower Manhattan?
Well, that's where the action was this morning. It was all around the financial district and stopping in front of Chase. And one woman from Code Pink said that they had actually, you know, entered some of the lobbies of some of the banks. Most people don't want to get arrested, so they've been usually dispersing when the police, you know, give the order. But I also saw, you know, this grab action where the police ordered people on the sidewalk, back on the sidewalk, out of the street. And as soon as people complied, I heard a white-shirted police officer say, "Start grabbing bodies." And they just grabbed people off the sidewalk after they told people to get on the sidewalk.
That's FSRN's Melinda Tu, who is reporting from Lower Manhattan. Melinda, thank you.
Thank you, Dorian.
Ahead of today's actions, Occupy anniversary events also took place throughout the weekend, including an inaugural assembly, breakout groups, direct actions, and the release of a collaborative publication, The Debt Resistors Operations Manual. Saturday's education-themed gatherings were followed by celebratory events on Sunday, during which activists assessed the movement and what lies ahead. FSRN's Andalusia Knoll was there and files this report.
Downtown Manhattan is once again filled with the iconic chants of the Occupy movement, which united a wide spectrum of people who are challenging corporate power and unfettered capitalism. To mark the one-year anniversary, Occupy Wall Street planned 4 days of education, celebration, and action. Nicole Cardi has been involved with the inner workings of Occupy Wall Street and says that the weekend's actions show that they've come a long way.
We're disorganized and chaotic, but still had a dream, and a year later we're more organized, you know, not perfect, right? But we've definitely grown as a movement and grown up and learned a lot.
Cardi says each of these clusters will challenge specific corporate targets ranging from banks to government agencies.
I think one thing that you could point out just from today and what happened really quickly over this weekend was the functional spokes council that we had to plan the actions. That's a directly democratic organizational tool that is really complicated and is based off of really small groups that have affinity with each other and trust, and that they could all recognize themselves as groups that have affinity and then come together and like have a plan on their own and then put those plans together to form a cluster and then put those clusters together to form an action is a huge victory.
Welcome to the new world order.
Sunday's events featured a concert in a public square near Wall Street with musical groups that used socially conscious lyrics, including Tom Morello, Jello Biafra, and Rebel Diaz. Immediately following the concert, services were held for the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah.
Let us root ourselves in this sacred way.
Another participant in this weekend's events was George Machado, who has participated in Occupy Wall Street since the beginning. He says the movement inspired him and gives him hope moving forward.
What I'm hoping to see is there's been a very strong network of people created through this. And I'm hoping to see that network disseminate and really root itself in different localities and build long-term projects that lead toward like revolutionary change here in the United States. So I think what's special about our time right now is like we can communicate faster than they can stop us. So we can just have this hope, this very robust network of people being built with a lot of trust that wants to have radically different things happen to our world.
A heavy police presence and over 150 arrests marred Occupy Wall Street's anniversary, but did not prevent the thousands of protesters from denouncing Wall Street's greed. Protesters moved through the financial district in small decentralized clusters, saying they were making sure the world, quote, knew that Occupy is not dead. In the coming days, the Occupy movement will host a free university to offer education they consider to be collaborative and politically empowering. Andrew Janol, FSRN, New York City.
Transportation workers went on strike today in Madrid and Barcelona, leading to traffic jams on city roads and packed subway rides. This comes just 2 days after large anti-austerity demonstrations in various cities in Spain and Portugal. The largest of those was in Madrid, where austerity opponents from around the country demanded a referendum on future financial decisions and threatened a general strike. From Madrid, FSRN's Robert Downs reports.
Carrying balloons, signs, and banners, thousands marched to Madrid's Plaza de Colón, including social workers, teachers, and public employees of all kinds. Many of them came in on buses from around the country. Demonstrators demanded a say in what the government does and where it cuts its budget. Blanca Landazuri is a journalist for a government-funded television station in Madrid. Like other speakers, including prominent politicians and union leaders, she demanded a referendum on the government's austerity measures.
The president of this government presented himself in the elections with a program very different from the one he's now forcing onto society. What societal forces are now demanding is the possibility that the people are consulted.
Spain's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy and his People's Party have cut services and raised taxes as part of an austerity plan recommended by the European Union and other international parties. On September 1st, the sales tax in Spain rose for everything, from medicine to mass transit. On some items like haircuts and theater tickets, the rate rose from 8 to 21%. And there are more raises scheduled for 2014. Public workers have suffered pay cuts, and those are the people that came out in force to the march. Additionally, unemployment stands at about 25%. Ana Maria Montesinos works at a state-assisted company that provides psychologists to middle schools and high schools, and she's seen funds cut.
I am a psychologist, so I work in the social area. I work with disabled people. They keep cutting and they keep not paying what they should pay. If the things continue the way they are, we might end up having to close.
Government officials responded to the march by expressing relief that the gathering was small, by their estimate 65,000 people. The economic minister said this showed that the majority of Spaniards recognized that the austerity measures were inevitable. International investors have been keeping a close eye on Spain, as many predict the country will soon request its own full-blown sovereign bailout, similar to the ones in Portugal, Ireland, and Greece. That's on top of the bailout of the Spanish-making sector in June of up to roughly $130 billion. The same large unions that organized Saturday's demonstration organized Monday's transport strikes in Barcelona and Madrid. In Barcelona, there's limited rail and bus traffic, and in Madrid, the strike is limited to rail. There are three more partial strikes planned in the next 2 weeks. Robert Downs, FSRN, Madrid.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapshi and Janine Etter. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.